The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Irma. Baby, put the candles down and listen to Mommy. Come here. Listen. I would like to have Stefan. I would like to ask Stefan to greet our lone guest today, but he's waist deep in swamp work, literally, and Mr. Darling is at a shapeshifters conference. So I need you to let our guests in. Irma, why does this always have to be a struggle every time? What do you want, baby?
I want an eye.
Irma, I cannot poke a guest's eye out just to make you happy.
Well,
it would be fun, but I can't do it for no reason. Oh, listen, you answer the door nicely, and I'll make sure you get something from the guest that will make you happy. All right? Welcome, my dear guest. Irma, let go of our guest's shirt sleeve. Irma, it's smoldering. Let go. Oh, how wonderful to see you. And you've dressed up for the visit. You look divine. Look at you. You gleam like goo on a bog body. Oh my. Please, here, take a seat beside me in Mr. Darling's chair. sorry about the fur. the wolf pups, you know. Where are they? Oh, camping. Yes, that does seem unusual for stylish Mr. Darling. but I can tell you, believe it or not, Mr. Darling has a rugged, outdoorsy side that hardly anyone knows about for more than a few seconds. He wears some flannel shirts and those blue denim jeans. And he has wilderness survival skills that many people do not. Anyway, yes, he and his brother Jed have taken the wolf pups deep into Phantom Forest to camp and sharpen their skills. Boys will be boys, you know. Oh, look. Natasha is here already with a tray of Midnight Library tea. And scrumptious little goodies for us. This tea, I really do think you'll find it's smooth and soothing. It will help you calmly enjoy the deviously dark tale I want to tell you this evening. And are these scones, Natasha? They are. These lovely little toothsome treats will help keep your stomach at ease. Ah, Natasha has thought of everything. Look, there's normal butter and some kind of jam for the scones. Do be very careful of our cutlery, though. All of our knives are handmade and sharpened at Beelzebub's Blade Works. It's not quite in the village, but these knives, they can cut you before you even touch the blade. Well, that's their slogan anyway. So cute. Thank you, Natasha. Oh, such a lovely girl, our Natasha. Now, are you comfy?
No, no, no.
You will be. Have a sip of the tea. You know, my lovely, we here in the library are very aware that you who live in the village are under a constant barrage of rumors and hearsay about the goings-on and the inhabitants who live here and on the grounds. And I don't want to come across as contrary or constantly insisting that all of this blather is wrong. But most of it is. And, well, I'm just eternally grateful for marvelous, open-minded guests like you who courageously visit us and can see that we're hardly any of these things that the rumor mill says we are. In this delightfully little disturbing tale I'm about to tell you, well, I've chosen it because it shows just how ruthless and cruel some humans are capable of being. And I'll point out to you that it's often them and not us doing such dastardly things. We would do other things, which we totally would not do. Let me tell you about amazing Mr. Malloy. A long time ago, well, a long time ago to you, nearly a century ago, in New York City, times and life in the budding city were more than a little challenging for thousands of people. The world-famous city was a very dangerous place during these years, with poverty and crime being two of the most hazardous conditions. Law enforcement was diligently trying their best to keep as many of the city's citizens as safe as possible. But with more and more people moving from rural areas into the city, and immigrating people arriving in the bustling city, crowded boatloads of new residents arrived by the hundreds several times each day. The comparably small police force was fighting a genuinely losing battle. So, in the ever-increasingly populated city, with less and less safety and surveillance available to its people, a variety of crimes and underhanded dealings were significantly on the rise. Pockets of mobsters gathered to plot and plan how they could best abuse, cheat, and rob the vulnerable public. Drugs, guns, gambling, murder, rape, and theft were all climbing. To add fuel to this felonious fire, prohibition, the forbidding of alcohol at the time, seemed to be making an anxious public feel even worse. They couldn't even have a glass of beer or wine to relax as they muddled through these trying times in the crowded city. So, organized crime, and even sloppily disorganized crime, was a constant danger to everyone. One of these poor souls, the one I want to tell you about, was an Irish immigrant from County Donegal named Mike Malloy. There's a reason people are still talking about him nearly a century after his, let's say, delayed demise. Once, supposedly, he was a robust firefighter, a hero to those around him. But Mr. Malloy somehow lost his daring job, possibly because he was a little too fond of spirits. Not our kind of spirits, the alcoholic variety. Mr. Malloy, either willingly or unwillingly, was a formidable drinker. One can only guess at the time he may have had access to rarefied homemade alcoholic drinks during this prohibition. These home-mixed illegal intoxicants went by some fabulous code names: horse liniment, tarantula juice, and my favorite, coffin varnish, which hinted that the homemade concoctions could actually be deadly, since they were made by a process that severely lacked the typical safe ingredients and sanitized conditions of the professional brewing and distilling process. A dangerous game indeed. Those who secretly made these dodgy drinks were called bootleggers and moonshiners. Moonshiners. I do like the sound of that one. For, you know, more romantic purposes, of course. But there was another way to obtain illegal liquor during these times. The organized crime rings I mentioned ran speakeasies, ultra-super-secret bar rooms hidden away in private homes, warehouses, and businesses that looked perfectly normal to everyone else, like a bowling alley or bookshop. But they contained concealed back rooms or basements that hosted a fully stocked pub or bar. Only those in the know who knew the secret password or knock could gain entrance to these places. people in the village say the Broom and Fang has this way about it. Oh, which I would like to refute. But I'm busy with this story just now. In any case, Mr. Malloy was a constant presence in a few of these invisible underground establishments. He was a diehard customer, and as you'll hear, a literal diehard. During these uproarious times, paper crimes were also easier to get away with. Forgery, counterfeiting, and fraudulent banking and insurance claims were rampant, and a group of unscrupulous men took notice of Mr. Malloy's astonishing drinking habit. The ever-present imbibing buyer also seemed hopeless, alone, with no one ever either in his company or at home. The shifty men engaged Malloy in polite conversation, prying into his personal situation to see if anyone would miss him, or if anyone already had a life insurance policy on him. But Mr. Malloy was utterly alone, like you, here with me. 5 men conspired to drive Michael Malloy to an early death, and then cash in on his tragic demise, making off with $3,500 in life insurance money to be split between them. Now, that sounds a rather paltry amount in these current times, doesn't it, my dear? But in 1932, $3,500 was equal to over $60,000. A handsome sum, even today. At first, there were only 3. 3 greedy, wily men who sat eyeing Malloy and occasionally asking him questions as they poured more and more booze for the witless drinker. Tony Marino owned the little speakeasy and agreed to keep Malloy soaking in whiskey, while he and Francis Pasqua and Daniel Griesberg hatched their murderous machination. See, that doesn't sound like us at all. It all began as 24-year-old Francis Pasqua floated the idea to the other men.
Hey, why not take out a policy on Malloy?
Pasqua said to the secret bar owner, Marino. Pasqua was an undertaker by trade, and he explained how easily it could be done, and that he would take care of the rest. Also, this wasn't Marino's first rodeo, as they say, and Pasqua knew it. Marino had already successfully cashed in on the death of a homeless woman that he had hurried along to her doom. Marino had befriended her and coerced her, possibly while she was drunk, into signing a life insurance policy with him as the beneficiary. Then, one freezing winter night, he plied her with drink until she passed out, undressed her, and left her in an unheated room beneath an open window. When she was found, the local medical examiner signed her cause of death as pneumonia, and Marino cashed in. Again, this would never be our style. So, the three crooked men conspired and agreed that given the way Malloy drank, well, he didn't have long to live anyway. No one could continue to knock back the copious amounts of hooch the way he did, and live for very long. The plotters reasoned that they may as well get what any family member may have gotten under the circumstances. And the plan was simple, kind of. Being an undertaker, Pasqua knew shady people in the insurance industry that would help with the paperwork. One being Nick Mellory, who proclaimed at first that he was a florist, which seemed to check out. It took nearly 5 months for the men to work their way through the paperwork dealing with crooked insurance salesmen to get their policies in order. All the while, Mike Malloy was poured drink after drink, gallons, in fact, in the hidden away speakeasy of Marino's secret pub. And it was getting expensive. Malloy was believed to be about 60 years old, but he was actually only 50, and excessive alcohol can pickle a person, making them look rough. Each day, Malloy would wander into the bar asking,
"Well, gents, what's on the house?"
And they gave him the hardest stuff they had. And Malloy would drink until he passed out, only to wake up and request more booze. The tricksters increased their efforts, first giving Malloy strong whiskey, then pouring him rotgut, liquor that was so poorly made it was basically poison. Again, this would hardly be our style. Anyway, day after day, Mike Malloy downed buckets of the disgusting spirits and would fall down drunk in the streets. Then, the next day, he would turn up at the bar saying he'd had a terrible night, and could he please have some more mother's milk to help him forget. The group of frauding friends who were losing big money, not only to the cost of all of the alcohol they were supplying to Malloy, but also in the payments for the premiums on his life insurance policies. Tony Marino reportedly wanted Malloy shot dead, but the others convinced him to be more patient. They made a special purchase for Malloy from the local hardware store. They bought pure wood alcohol, spirits made with just 4% wood alcohol could cause the drinker to go blind, hence the phrase, blind drunk. Statistics from 1929 state that more than 50,000 people who drank the rank substance died from it. And literally, for insurance purposes, the grifting men gave Malloy the wood alcohol, neat, 100% straight wood alcohol. They got him warmed up with regular gin or whatever they had. And when he became sufficiently tipsy from the good stuff, they then gave him an entire glass of the deadly substance. And Mike Malloy happily drank it down and asked for more. The malicious men watched eagerly as he guzzled down more of the deadly drink. Surely now, tomorrow, someone would find Malloy dead as a doornail, and they would have their winnings. But the next day, Mike strolled into the speakeasy, asking for more of that fabulous fire water. He could see and walk, and wasn't affected by the lavish amounts of the 100-proof poison in any way. So the grifters upped their game. And next, they gave Mike Malloy antifreeze, and nothing happened. So they increased their efforts again, and gave the oblivious man straight turpentine, which at the time came in a tin with a daunting skull and crossbones on it, to warn even those who could not read not to ingest the deadly substance. Turpentine is made from toxic pine tree resins. When ingested, it causes violent vomiting, kidney damage, brain damage, coma, and then death. But Malloy happily drank it. He liked it, and he asked for more. The furious five who were running out of ideas and going broke from their deadly investment gave Malloy cheap rat poison, probably on a sandwich or scone. Don't worry, this still isn't our style. Rat poison back then contained such substances as strychnine and heavy metals like arsenic and thallium, or potent poisons like cyanide and red squill. There were no antidotes of any kind, and the substance could not be rinsed or cleansed from the system. Any poor animal or person who ate it would die, except Mike Malloy, who was unaffected. Next, they fed him rotten clams, and nothing happened. So they fed him raw oysters soaked in wood alcohol, hoping to, explode his stomach, I guess. But Mike didn't even notice. He was just happy to have free food with his drinks. So, next, they made him a special sandwich of rancid sardines and carpet tacks, which Mike ate and requested seconds. It's not fun, I know. Marino had it with this freak of a man. He demanded that the others take serious hands-on action. So the gruesome group finally decided to ice poor Mike Malloy in the same manner that Marino had ended the life of the homeless woman. They waited until one bitterly cold sub-zero night. They filled Malloy with drink until he blacked out, then rustled him into the rear seat of Pasqua's car and drove him to a lonely park. They stripped him naked and lugged him far out into the deep snow. For good measure, they poured gallons of water over his bare skin and watched it freeze. Then they quickly left him for someone else to find. It was finally done. Until Mike blew through the doors the next day, looking for a warming drink, saying that he had had a bit of a chill the night before. The hopeful murderers were flabbergasted. They greeted him through forced smiles and decided to call a friend of a friend who was a cab driver. For the sum of $150, Harry Green agreed to run smack over Malloy and make sure he bit the dust. Once again, the durable Donegal man was filled with drink to the point of incapacitation and then thrown on the floor of the back seat of Harry Green's cab, while the plotters piled in to assist in the hit. They drove a few blocks away to a quiet, empty street. Two of the conspirators dragged Malloy to the center of the road and held him up squarely by his limp arms and planned to jump out of the way as the speeding cab ran over Malloy. It is said that Malloy somehow managed to fall or leap out of the way of the hit twice, but on the third go, there was a loud thud as Malloy was hit at 50 miles per hour and doubled over from the impact, landing on the hood of the cab. When he slid off onto the ground, Green drove over him, smashing him beneath the wheels. All of the men quickly fled the scene and waited for the news. For days, there was nothing, certainly no sign of Malloy. Now, it was a mystery. Which morgue had the body? Without a body, they couldn't identify him and collect their money. Anxious for their payoff, they made call after call to local morgues, asking about any John Doe's they might have. But there simply wasn't anyone who was unidentified. So again, they waited. A full 3 weeks later, a bruised and battered Mike Malloy hobbled through the doors of the speakeasy, looking for a much-needed drink. Happy to be back in the tank, he told his friends how he could only remember having some drinks and being out in the night and things going black, and then waking up in a nice warm hospital room where they kindly patched him up. Marino poured Iron Mike Malloy another drink. The failed murderers were fed up with hemorrhaging money for Malloy, and they were arguing about what their next method should be. Whatever it was, it had to work this time. The merciless men, once again, came up with a plan. Like a well-oiled machine, they began pouring Malloy as much booze as it would take to get him well and duly sloshed. Then they escorted him upstairs. to Marino's apartment over the illegal bar below. They dumped the blottoed man onto Marino's bed, then loosened a gas pipe that powered a light, and fitted it with a length of rubber hose, and forced the hose down the throat of Mike Malloy. They sealed it around his face with a wet cloth, and Malloy breathed in the toxic blood-poisoning gas for a solid hour before he stopped breathing altogether. Even then, just to be sure he was dead this time, the men waited a while before calling a crooked doctor friend who filled in the cause on Mike Malloy's death certificate as pneumonia. Malloy's body was buried immediately, which we almost always go with this policy. I mean, speaking of policies, the killers quickly collected their first policy. The Metropolitan Life Insurance Agency paid out $800, $160 each when it was split between the murderers. This barely covered the months of money they spent in policy premiums and gallons of expensive booze, dodgy booze, various poisons, and meal after meal of rotten fish, moldy bread, and carpet tacks they had filled their clueless victim with. And when the men applied to collect the bigger policies, the friendly insurance agent said,
"Why, certainly. When can I see the body?"
Pasqua replied,
Well, you can't. He's already buried."
So the men left with nothing and began squabbling and fighting with each other. Rumors began to fly. Within a few weeks, an investigation was launched, and Mike Malloy was raised from his grave. He opened his waxy eyes and asked for a drink. I'm kidding. No. A proper autopsy was performed on Mr. Malloy, and the report came back that he was filled with poisonous gas that had ended his life. The members of what became known as the Murder Trust were all convicted of murdering, diligently murdering, Mike Malloy. Durable Mike Malloy. One report we've read tells of how they were all sent to their deaths in the electric chair, and that all of them died with the jolt of the very first try. How merciful. Hardly anyone remembers their names, but Durable Mike Malloy became a legend. Dear, you've cut your finger. Oh, how close did you come to the knife? Come on, let me see. Oh, no. Oh, my. Your little pinky has come away and rolled under the marble credenza. Oh, what a shame. Oh, dear. Oh, no. When Mr. Darling returns from... Did I say camping? Oh, yes, camping. I'll see if he can lift the credenza to look for your wee finger. Oh, he should be back as soon as next week. It'll probably be green and covered in fluff, but we'll mail it to you. Excuse me. Oh, now don't worry, it's no trouble. Although there is old cold air return under the lovely credenza. So your finger may have fallen in the furnace. We'll try our best. Excuse me. Here, let's wrap your little hand. Oh no, not with a good linen. I mean, it's dyed black with something that probably wouldn't help. Here's a nice paper napkin that won't be as bad for you. Aw. Oh, here, let Irma hold your hand as she walks you to the door. She has such warm little hands. Thank you for visiting. Good night, my dear guest. Good night. Irma, baby, is our guest safely on their way?
Probably.
Never mind. Baby, whip your little tail under the cursed credenza and fish out what's been chopped off the guest for you.
A finger! Yay!
Now, do you want to roast it or do a spell with it? What would you like?
I want to return it.
Return it? Irma, you want to be nice?
That way, I can give them the finger.
That sounds right. And then there were three. By popular demand and the dark forces in charge, there are now three Midnight Library activity books with eerie art covers and devilish pages to occupy your idle hands. There's The Library, The Witch, and The Werewolf, a combination gratitude journal and wicked word scramble games. The Witch's Decomposition and Sketchbook, with lined pages for your shifty thoughts and blank pages to sketch them into reality. And everyone's favorite, The Book of Witchcraft Word Search, featuring tons of witchy words and characters and places from the Midnight Library for you to hunt down. Find them all on Amazon under Forbidden Books from the Midnight Library. The Midnight Library is written and produced by me, Miranda Merrick. Our excellent sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. We would like to thank everyone at our parent company, Astonishing Legends. The Midnight Library is being crowdfunded by our awesome patrons. They get everything first, plus lots of haunted extras. If you would miss the library if it closed, please support it. Visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. Do this at midnight for extra protection. To find your favorite Midnight Library, Broom and Fang Pub, or League of Lady Gravediggers bizarre merch, visit redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary, and everything will be just fine.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.